appreciate it. I'd just like to introduce us. I'm Mandy Forrest. I'm one of the four lay members on the CCG board. And I'm going to chair this evening's session. I've got colleagues from the CCG at the top table. I think actually what I'll let you do is just say who you are and what your role is. Okay.
All right. I'm Terry Hudson. I'm a GP and I'm also on the CCG board.
I'm Nikki Doherty. I'm one of the directors at the CCG.
I'm St John Livesey. I'm a GP and I take a lead on urgent care. Sorry, I'm St John Livesey. I'm a GP and I take a lead on urgent care at the CCG.
Okay. I'm Kate Lee. I'm one of the deputy directors at the CCG and I'm also supporting this work on urgent care.
And we've also got other colleagues dotted about who are here to help and have a responsibility for communications and engagement. This is an important meeting for us, so I'm very grateful that you've turned out. I'm sorry that other people haven't, but this isn't the only meeting we're going to have. As a CCG, we've been doing some work for some time now on how we think we need to reorganise some of the urgent care provision around the city for the benefit of patients. And we've come up with some proposals and some options, and we're now out to the public and others to get your views. So this is a genuine session, so we can tell you what we think will work and hear your views, concerns, positives, negatives, your comments. We're going to take notes of the meeting. We're also going to record it so there isn't a chance we miss something and get it wrong. And we've also got two flip charts where we'll, on one flip chart, note issues specifically around urgent care. But if there are other issues that come up that aren't around urgent care, rather than lose them, we'll just make a note of them and find the right forum to then deal with those. What I would ask is that we let Kate do her presentation, which is about 15 minutes, and then we open it up for questions. It would be helpful, perhaps, if there are particular questions around your own health or medical condition, this might not be the best forum to talk about those, but colleagues around the room can talk to you afterwards about those, rather than people get into the nitty-gritty of their own health problems. I'm not trying to stifle the debate by saying that, but sometimes I've been in meetings where people do get kind of sidetracked into their own issue, and we're not in a position to give medical advice at a meeting like this. So, housekeeping quickly, we're not expecting a fire drill. If the fire alarm goes off, then the fire exit's there. If you need the facilities, if you just walk past the kitchen hatch and turn right, there's men's, ladies, and a disabled loo. And I think everybody has been offered a tea and coffee. The lady who's just come in, if you want one, somebody can grab one for you. You're okay. Right, thank you. So I'd like to start by asking Kate to do a presentation on what our proposals are and the options, and then we'll take questions. Thank you.
Okay, so good evening, everybody. Hopefully you can hear me with the microphone on, which I'm not used to using, but we'll give it a go. So I'm going to talk you through what we're proposing, and then, as Mandy said, we'll have some questions and debate afterwards. So, first of all, what is urgent care? So it's treatment for minor illness and minor injuries that are urgent but are not life, limb or sight-threatening injuries. So it's things like ear and throat infections, sprains and minor cuts. And it includes both physical and mental health problems. In the city at the moment, we have got GP practices, we've got optometrists and pharmacists who provide urgent care. We've also got a walk-in centre at Broad Lane. We've got the minor injuries unit at the Royal Hallamshire Hospital, an emergency eye clinic that's at the Royal Hallamshire, and we've got an out-of-hours GP service that runs from the Northern General. Over the last 2 to 3 years, thousands of Sheffield residents have told us that we need to make a number of changes to urgent primary care. They include making it simpler for you to get the care that you need as quickly as possible. I'm a Sheffield patient, and sometimes I find it confusing knowing which service to use in what circumstance. and maybe some of you do will do, and will too, and we can have some debate about that after I finish talking. We know that lots of you find it really difficult to access GP appointments on the day. Lots of you have problems accessing appointments in a more planned manner. So when you need an appointment in sort of 2 to 3 days' time or in a week's time, but this consultation is focusing on when you think you need treatment today. And lots of you are telling us actually that's quite hard to achieve at the moment. Lots of you have told us that you want us to make more care available closer to people's homes, and that we should be making best use of the services and the staff that we've currently got within the city. So what are we proposing? I know lots of people have focused on the third bullet point, but actually I would say that the first two are much bigger potential changes for the majority of patients in Sheffield. So I'm going to start with those two. So we are proposing to improve the way that people access services. In the future, you would be able to either contact your GP practice or ring 111, be assessed either over the telephone or face-to-face, and offered either a booked appointment, if that's what you need, for urgent care, or signposted to the most appropriate service to meet your needs. We are proposing to change the way that people get urgent GP appointments. So groups of GP practices will be working together. When you've been assessed, part of the point of that assessment is to decide whether you need to be seen in your own practice or whether you should be or could be seen in one of your local GP practices and potentially by a clinician other than a GP. So these groups will be led by GPs, but they will have a team of clinicians working within them that will include pharmacists, physiotherapists, mental health workers, because we know that for some patients, actually, they can be seen and treated more appropriately by a different professional other than a GP. We're also proposing to change where people would go for minor injuries and for some patients also minor illness. So at the moment, I've said we've got the walk-in centre in the city centre, and that treats adults and children with minor illness. We've got the minor injuries, which treats adults with minor injuries. And then we've got the Children's Hospital Emergency Department that treats children with minor injuries. In the future, there's three different options that we're proposing, and we'll come on to the differences between those options in a couple of slides' time. But under our preferred option, we would be proposing that all adults would go to the Northern General and would be seen at the urgent treatment centre there for minor injuries, and if they choose not to get access to their GP for minor illness. And the children's, if you're an under 16, you would go to the Children's Hospital. We're also changing where people go for urgent eye care. So at the moment, you can go to your GP, you can go to an optometrist, but lots of people end up going to the Royal Hallamshire Clinic. And we're proposing that for patients with urgent eye care, as opposed to sight-threatening eye care, that we introduce a range of services out in the community that are closer to people's homes and that have longer opening hours for patients. There are some things that we're not proposing to change. So we're not cutting or reducing any what we call emergency services, so services for life or limb or sight-threatening patients. We're not planning to make any changes to what we call planned GP appointments, so those appointments that you book a couple of days or a couple of weeks in advance. We are not closing the emergency eye clinic, and I know this was reported in error by The Star a couple of weeks ago, but we're not planning on changing or closing the emergency eye clinic. And we're not planning on making any changes this winter. We think if the public agree that this is the right thing to do in the consultation, the services roll out as we've proposed in the consultation, that all of these services won't probably be in place until April 2020 because they are significant changes and it will take time to roll out. So we're not planning on making any changes this winter. I've not put it up there, but we're also not planning on saving any money. This is about making best use of the money that we've got currently that we spend across the system and about using it differently to give people better access, quicker access, and to make the services across the city fairer for everybody. So, as I said, in the consultation document, there are three options for the urgent treatment centres. They are quite similar, and we accept that. The preferred option, as I've just talked through, is that adults would be seen at the Northern and children would go to the Children's Hospital. And at the Children's Hospital, they'd either go to the urgent treatment centre if they've got a minor illness or to the emergency department if they've got an injury. Under option two, the difference between that and our preferred option is that if you're a child with minor illness, you would also go to the Northern General. So the only time you go to the Children's Hospital is if you're a child with a minor injury. And under option three, very similar to option one, adults would go to the Northern General, but adults with minor injuries would be treated at the emergency department rather than at the urgent treatment centre. Do those make sense before I go any further? Just nods or...?
Well, okay. We'll take okay, questions so we'll, at the end, but I've noted it's not making sense to you at the moment.
So, how might it look in the future? Last year, my daughter developed infected eczema, and I rang my practice, and I happened to ring them because we'd come home from holiday. I rang them at 1:50 in the afternoon. I was on hold for 15 minutes on the phone because we've got a queuing system in our practice, and when I got through, I asked to speak to the triage nurse, and I was told that triage ended at 2 o'clock. Well, I'd been on the phone waiting to get through. I asked what I should do because I thought that I needed to speak to a clinician, and I was told that I had two choices. I could either try and ring back tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock and try and go through the triage process again, or I could go to the walk-in centre that afternoon if I felt that it was that important. For me, I felt really frustrated about that, because actually what I wanted is just to have a conversation to check that I was doing the right thing, and it was quite difficult for me to achieve that. Now, I know there's lots of practices in Sheffield, well, there's some practices in Sheffield that are doing this really well, and we are getting feedback through the consultation about that, but there are lots of practices patients are experiencing similar issues. So in terms of how it would look like in the future, in 2020, I would be able to contact my practice, get through straight away, speak to someone about my issue, and they would direct me to the right service. If I needed an urgent appointment, they'd be able to book me an appointment then and there, so I knew when and where I was going to be seen. It would be within 24 hours, and for the majority of patients, it would be within the same day. I would also see a clinician that can best treat my needs first time. And potentially, depending on what my need was, somebody may offer to ring me back later in the day or in the evening to make sure that my condition hadn't worsened. And if it had, we could then have a conversation about what was the next, you know, what was the next thing to do, or what was the best next step to take. So we think that the proposals that we have suggested in the consultation will provide a less confusing system for patients to ensure that they get the care right first time. And we'll be doing that through that initial contact that you make either with your practice or with 111 to identify where is the most appropriate place for you to go. So you don't have to make that decision in the future. We think that we can guarantee that patients who need an urgent appointment will be offered one within 24 hours, either at their own practice or within a local practice. And for most patients, that will be an appointment within the same day. And we also think that for most of the time, care will be closer to your home with fewer people having to travel across the city. So this is a consultation process. On some of the meetings that I've been to so far, people have said, well, there isn't much choice, you've already made the decision. That's absolutely not the case. We are interested in people's views, and we will do as much as we can to seek people's views and hear what people are telling us. So far, the consultation's been running for two, three weeks. We've had about 90 survey responses back, 90 questionnaires. The key things that we've heard from those 90 questionnaires, but also from some of the conversations that we've been having with people in meetings like this, are people do have concerns about travel, and particularly parking at the Northern General. We've had some quite positive feedback about the fact that most people would prefer to have urgent care closer to their homes, and that most people at the moment are saying that they would be happy to go and see another, to be seen in a practice in their local area if it meant that they could get access within 24 hours. But we want to hear what you all think. There's a number of different ways that you can do that. Some of those ways are included in your consultation pack. Clearly, you're all here today, so you've got one of the messages about how to feedback. We do really want people to fill in the questionnaire at the back of the consultation form. You can do it online if you would prefer to, rather than do it in a hard copy. But that is one of the key ways that we are sort of trying to collect some of the specific feedback, particularly about the changes to the GP practices and how that might impact on people. The consultation closes on the 18th of December, so you've got a little bit of time yet, but please spread the word, get as many people as you know to get involved and feedback in all of the different ways that we have got, and colleagues around the room can tell us how other ways to do that as we go through the discussion.
Okay, thanks, Kate. So that was an overview of our plans. Hopefully you've all picked up our consultation document as you came in. This is, you know, we will note all your views and concerns and viewpoints that you give us tonight. But as Kate said, we'd also welcome you, if you've got the time, getting, you know, writing in either on the survey form or however. You know, we just really genuinely want to hear your views. We're not a huge group tonight, so I'm sure everybody's going to have the chance to ask their questions. And it might be that some of the questions you've got in your mind are answered by other people raising them. But I would like to now open it to you all, and perhaps if you could put your hand up if you want to ask a question. I know you do, because you nearly did in the presentation.
I'm getting a little confused about what's happening in the community, because currently we have our GP practice, we have neighbourhood groups, we have satellite hubs. Now, these teams, these different professionals that we can refer to, are these coming out of the neighbourhood surgeries and the satellite hubs, or is this a different component that's being set up? And where are these people coming from?
Right. Before we answer that question, can I just check, are people familiar with what we mean by neighbourhoods and satellite hubs?
No,
wrong. Could somebody around the table explain that, please?
So the satellite hubs have been set up to provide predominantly extended access. So if you go and see somebody outside of core GP hours, you might be referred to the satellite hub, where a GP normally from that area will be able to see you, or a nurse indeed. And in fact, I think there's physio sessions there now as well. The neighbourhoods are currently in different stages. So we have 16 neighbourhoods across the city, and they are groups of practices who work together to think about how they can support each other in providing core general practice. So that's kind of the in-hours general practice offer to patients, which links into the proposals that are about this urgent care model. There's not a lot of development there yet. This would be one of the big tests of how neighbourhoods work. And then your individual practices are, they respond to their registered population and provide you with services.
So the question was specifically around the staff and the resources that are currently around neighbourhoods and the GPs working together collaboratively. Are they the folk that would be used to enable this to work?
Yes. So in terms of the way, when we talk about a group of local GPs working together, we mean neighbourhoods. But we didn't want to use the term neighbourhoods, because for lots of people out in across Sheffield, that means absolutely nothing. If you're a member of the general public, neighbourhoods, it doesn't mean anything to them. But in effect, what it means is that the groups of GP practices that are currently working together in a neighbourhood will offer a solution. So it means that the groups have got different numbers of GP practices in them, and we've got some maps out on the table about what that means for individual members of individual practices and where they might need to travel to. So we would look at, as part of that assessment, you know, when you contact the practice, or you contact 111 and you explain what your needs are, they will assess whether you need to be seen by your own practice team, or whether you can be seen by somebody within the local area. If it's within the local area, it will be within the neighbourhood. So it could be in your practice, or it could be your GP working in a different practice. It could be that you go to another practice in the local area to be seen, and it might be that you're seen by an advanced nurse practitioner, or by a pharmacist, or by a physio, and a range of clinical professionals will see you. In terms of, so that's in core hours, so what we mean by that is Monday to Friday, 8 till 6:30. In the evening and at weekends, and what we call the twilight period, so at the moment we're proposing from 6:30 till about 11 o'clock at night, and then from 8 a.m. till 11 p.m. at weekends, if you need a GP appointment then, you would be seen in the extended hours service, so these satellite hubs that we've currently got, but we think that some of those probably need to move locations because they're not all accessible easily for public transport at the moment. So you would be seen in one of those or at the urgent treatment centre.
Thank you. Terry, do you want to talk about what it feels like from a GP perspective?
Yeah, I'll give an example, because even still that sounds pretty confusing if you've not been through that. So I'll just give an example. If a patient rings my practice and our appointments are all full up, and under these proposals they will still speak to a GP or a nurse practitioner to get a feel of what their problem is. And if we're not able to offer them an appointment that day, and they need an appointment that day, it may be that the neighbouring practice that we work with has the capacity to do that. So, you know, between your groups of practices, you will be able to have that capacity. How the practices choose to do that is going to be sort of decided by the neighbourhood. If you call up and you've perhaps got a more routine thing that needs to be seen, and you work or it's not possible for you to come to your GP surgery, that's where you would use the satellite hub. So you can ring your GP and they can say, okay, I understand you need to be seen about this problem on a Saturday. We'll get you booked into the satellite hub. And the proposal is that we have four of those across the city, which is the model that we're using at the moment, and they do work quite well. So that's just a sort of a brief example of how that might work.
And in terms of the staffing, because I think that was the other part of the question about how we might staff it. So we think that by the GP practices working together, we'll provide more resilience and for some of the practices more capacity within those wider teams. But we're also looking at using the staff in the wider services that we've currently got. So we've got the walk-in centre staff, we've got the minor injuries unit staff, and some of the staff from the eye clinic, and about using those differently. Some of those will need to go and work in the urgent treatment centres, but we think probably we'll need some to go and work out in the neighbourhoods. We've also got, obviously, the range of other healthcare professionals that we think need to go and work in those services. Some of those will come from practices, but some of them will be new staff that are currently being trained or that we will need to attract from outside the local area or you know, within the wider geographical area.
Thank you. St John, is there anything you want to add?
Just the reason for neighbourhoods, really. Why? Because we are committed to neighbourhoods as a CCG, and it's something we're seeing is happening across the country, this, that GPs are working together, not just in their own practices. So they're sort of grouping into groups that treat about 35,000 patients. And the reason it's happening is it's the ability to bring other people who could be useful for treating the patient and more appropriate. So it might be that a pharmacist would be the person the patient should be seeing. It might be that a physio would be seeing, or a nurse practitioner. But for an individual practice, they might say, well, we only need 2 hours of a pharmacist that day, and it becomes impossible. But if you group it together, you can then all the extra staff that would be more appropriate for the person to see, you can suddenly say, okay, but if we take this as a group of five or six practices, then we've got enough work for them to do. So it's one of the ways to bring in more people into primary care when a single practice couldn't do it and struggle with the employment risk and all that sort of thing. Then we can say, well, if we do it as a group of practice, that's got much higher resilience and more use.
And perhaps could I add in as well, and again, colleagues might want to add to this, the CCG is the 81 practices in the city is the membership of the CCG. And so we're working very closely with primary care and GPs to make sure that we're fit for the future, really. So far in Sheffield, we haven't had the crises that some areas in the country have had around GP recruitment. But together, we're trying to work together so that we're not going to have crises in the future. And one of the ways we believe, and the GP practices are saying this to us, is that by GPs working more collectively and collaboratively across a patch, a neighbourhood, whatever we call it, that will help the practices themselves. So that is where some of our thinking came from. Is that a fair point? You've asked one question. Can I just see if there's anybody else who wants to?
I just wanted to come back on.
Yes, please.
So are we talking about a physical location for all these professional people? Or are they just being pulled out from existing services? So is an optician going to leave their particular business and go to this location? I mean, I'm not sure how it works.
Who wants to answer that?
Okay, so it's likely to vary. For the urgent eye care, we are likely to site those services in existing opticians' practices, because we think that's the most sensible thing to do. For some of the other services, it'll vary depending on the grouping of the GP practice and the needs of the individual population as to how we make that work. In some areas, it might be that we move staff and they go and work in a specific building. And so all the patients would go to that GP practice in the main that's been identified. But there are other models, and it'll depend on the population. So the homeless population, as a specific example, we already have GP practices that work quite differently with that group, and we wouldn't expect that to necessarily change. So they run some of the GPs at the moment go to some of the homeless charities and go and provide services there rather than expect the patients to go to the GP practice. So it will be a combination of different ways.
I think it's important just to add that there isn't a one-size-fits-all model for the neighbourhoods. Certainly, the neighbourhoods are loosely based on the geographical area they're in. So the care needs of people who live in the city centre, for instance, might be very different to people who live up in the north part of the city. So kind of the way the neighbourhood works may be different in the city centre, and the types of services they may need to offer may be different to the types of services in another area. So the neighbourhoods are being developed really to make sure they respond to what the local need is.
That's okay for the moment? If there's more questions, come back. Hello, hi, have you got a question?
One of the problems of Sheffield is that one doesn't know where to go. And the sort of situation you're describing is an absolutely chaotic from the point of view of where would you go?
Yes.
Would you go for this or would you go for
and
this?
I think one of the current system is very confusing, and I think one of the things that's sort of being put in the proposal here is that to alleviate that confusion, to help our patients get the right care the first time round, you essentially, for those urgent problems, you call your GP surgery, and the GP surgery will then work out where it is you need to go. So that confusion is kind of being taken away from the patient. And the decision is then being made by somebody at the other end who's going to help you get to the right place.
I'm sorry you missed the presentation, because we went through a little bit of this, but hopefully at the end of the meeting we could catch you just to show you what we talked about in the presentation. Would that be okay? Because we tried to explain that we recognise at the moment there's a lot of confusion in the system, and we've got some proposals where we believe the confusion will be lessened by a large degree. So could we just hold that for the moment, because some of your concerns might get alleviated as we ask more questions. Is that okay?
Well, I can't quite hear what you're saying, but anyway,
right, sorry.
Proceed.
Okay, we'll make sure we talk to you at the end of the meeting as well, so you know what we covered in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, please.
My concern really is the the losing the minor injuries unit at Hallamshire.
Yeah.
Because we all know that it's a trek across the city anyway to get to the Northern General. I know a situation with some young person in Derbyshire on the Duke Edward Ward being injured going to Northern General, having tried to get parked, having to wait 4.5 hours, coming down into Sheffield to minor injuries unit. When you look at the problems with A&E, you see a multitude of problems going into there. Are you not duplicating in some ways this urgent treatment centre at Northern General instead of having one at Hampshire? Because they're going to do the same things. You've got the same overheads, you've got the same premises, you'll have generally the same facilities to an extent, unless it's an emergency and you can transfer them. I don't see that loss, because a lot of people go into that place. And if you go into the walk-in centre in the city, if you ever go in, and I'm sure you must have been in, it's a mass of people.
Mm.
So there's a need for something in the city centre.
Right.
People can't travel out to the Northern General, can't park, they're waiting 4.5 hours more. How are you going to filter the people coming in from on accident emergency? Because not everybody's going to make a telephone call, are they, to get a GP appointment or an appointment to hospital. They'll just walk into accident and emergency in Northern General, expect to be seen. Whereas if with minor unit in Hampshire, there are people going into there and still be waiting 2.5 hours, but there is a need there, a need in the centre of the city for this area.
Yeah.
You can't travel across the city very quickly. And if you need urgent treatment, where do you go?
Yeah.
You go to Chesterfield.
Right.
I may elaborate on that last point. When we were taking away the accident and emergency several years ago from the Hampshire, there was this unspoken thought that some medical people were aware of, that people in the south of the city would go to Chesterfield.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to go to Chesterfield.
No.
We live in a city like Sheffield that has good facilities, excellent teaching facilities, and good GPs. We didn't move here to go to Chesterfield to the hospital.
Yeah. So there's several points that you've raised. One is about people going to A&E and what's the difference between A&E and the urgent care centre that we're proposing should be based at the Northern General. There's an issue about the facilities going to the Northern General and parking. And then there's an issue about, will people use Chesterfield, which feels completely inappropriate to Sheffield residents. So, St John, do you want to kick off on this?
I think it's fair to say that the minor injuries unit is the thing that, as a team, we've discussed a lot and had the most disagreements about, and you know, most difficulty about. As Kate pointed out in the talk,
to use that because I think people are struggling.
Oh, sorry. So, saying that the minor injuries unit is the thing that we have discussed a lot. I don't want to pretend it's the thing we discussed the most, because what we are most keen on is getting access to GPs or to primary care for minor illness. That was our most important thing we felt we had to solve in the city, that people ring their GPs, they're kept on call back. By the time they get through, the appointments are gone for the day, and we want to solve that problem. So I don't want to sort of say that this is the only thing we've discussed, but we have discussed the minor injuries a lot, minor injuries unit, and we've discussed and we've disagreed about it as to what the best way forward is. And I think we could all of us make cases to have a minor injuries unit or not. And frankly, I hope we could, because I hope we've got the ability to be able to see both sides of the argument. To make the case for not having a minor injuries unit, I think there's a simplicity to it. If you're injured, you're an adult, you go to the Northern General. Many people do anyway. It means that when you've got a real major accident on, so you've got a casualty, something's got a really big event on, you know, like a big crash on the M1 or something like that, you can pull minor injuries unit nurses across to help in the main part of the unit. And that is quite a significant systematic advantage for the running of A&E. Okay, so we're talking about emergency care there, but that is a systematic advantage for them. And then there's just sort of a more minor system advantage of just running one rota rather than two for the nurses that are in that unit. So that's the advantage for the system and for patients when there's a major incident. The disadvantage, of course, is about, is it just too inconvenient for the south of the city to have to go to the north if they've got a minor injury? Oh, sorry, the other final advantage is that if you go with a minor injury and actually it's more major, you've then got to get across the city and have to be seen twice rather than going into to the northern. Is that systematic advantage and the advantage in major accident, is that greater than the disadvantage by the inconvenience caused by people from the south of the city having to go up to the north? And that's the thing that really we've discussed a lot. And I think it's the sort of thing that you want a public consultation on, because you want, okay, let's put it out and let's see what people tell us about it. No. Yeah. 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 No, I think that's why. So I hope I've explained the advantages to having it. I can also make a good case for keeping it, you know. Okay. No, that's fair enough. But if I can explain, I don't think I'll aim to convince you, but if I can explain the reasons for it. And I can also explain reasons why it's valuable to keep the minor injuries unit. It is more convenient for the south of the city. There's a very interesting thing that actually the nurses there, who are the same nurses, they're not the same band, they are the same people, because they rotate between the minor injuries unit at the Hallamshire and then working at ED at the Northern General. They see people quicker, interestingly, when they're working in the minor injuries unit, possibly because they've got no one to ask. We don't know. Possibly because they can't ask a senior, should I do this? They've just got to make the decision. So, and actually at the moment we get it cheaper with it being there because of the way that the funding happens to work in the health service. So I think that argument would go out the window if we combine it all to the urgent treatment centre. So for me, I think there is a good coherent argument to not have a minor injuries unit and to have it all in urgent treatment centre at the Northern General. I also think there's very reasonable concerns about not having the minor injuries unit there because of the inconvenience to the south of the city. I know that the student, so one of the partners at the student practice phoned me and said, what about the Goodwin Sports Facility? You know, people get injured there. And obviously, they're not all students. I mean, I've played at the Goodwin Sports, I've played five-a-side, no good at football, was never a student, but even I've sort of played there. You know, so people go there for the minor injuries unit. So we recognise that convenience. And all I can say is, that's why we have a public consultation, so that we can listen to both sides. I want to carry on because I want to make an important distinction here. Yeah. Yeah. So that's minor injury. Minor illness, I think, is different. Okay. And minor illness, so minor injuries service. I'm an urban GP, so I just don't see minor injuries. I mean, I might say, yeah, you need an x-ray, or I think that needs stitching. But I don't do any more than that. Because I'm an urban GP, probably if I lived in the Yorkshire Dales or the Lake District, I would do all that stuff. But we've just lost our skills in minor injury. We absolutely haven't lost our skills in minor illness. And that is our sort of core work, is making sure we can do minor illness, working out actually what's not minor illness might appear so, but actually it's more serious. That's our sort of key job. And the minor illness is duplicated massively across the city, quite appropriately. Whether we can afford to duplicate it in the city centre when there's surrounding practices that could see people, I don't think we can. There are issues with that in terms of with minor. You often with illness you want much more follow up. It's much more useful knowing a person's history than it is in minor injury. So you want people to be part of primary care and part of general practice. There is a funding issue because many people who use the walk-in centre for minor illness they don't register with a Sheffield practice. So they're still staying in their own practices at home. So although Sheffield is paying for their treatment, the funding, if you look at it, is often, say, going to London because people don't have to re-register. So we lose quite a lot of money as a city. So there's a sort of double whammy. We don't attract the NHS money in that we should have, and we're already paying for those services around it. So we don't want to duplicate those services. So for me, I think there is a difference between the minor injury argument and the minor illness argument. And I think your comment that there is clearly a need for the service there because people use it, for me, that's a patch because we've got people difficulty getting the GP, the sort of thing that Kate was describing, trying to get her child seen. And so we recognise that there is this problem with being able to access primary care. We want to solve that problem, and that's why these two things go hand in hand. We could continue to patch it up, but we want to try to solve the problem. Yes. I'm separating illness from injury. So your comments at first were about minor injuries. You then mentioned about minor illness, which is why I covered minor illness. But I can only go back to my minor injuries thing, which is I think I can make a coherent argument for having a single unit. You know, children in the city only have one place to go, but it is central. But nobody complains that we need to have two places for the children. But, you know, so I can make a coherent argument for the adults, but I have to say, I think this is why you do a public consultation. We've got to hear that okay, it's helpful for the system, but it's just too inconvenient for us. And that's the consultation process.
They
are all on the same rotor. You know, they are literally the same people who work in the minor injuries who work over AD.
Can we leave that point for the moment? I'm sure we'll be coming back to a lot of these points.
I just want to, while we're on about minor injuries, I think there's another dimension to this. I live on this side of the city. I damage my ankle, so I can't use public transport because I'm in too much pain. I can't drive because I'm in too much pain. If I want a taxi, if I go to the Hallamshire, cost me £5-10 there and back. If I've got to go to Northern General, it's going to cost me twice as much. I can't afford it. I'm in pain. I need treatment. The doctor can't deal with it. I phone an ambulance.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that. Yeah. Which is more expensive, the system. Yeah.
I think there are a couple of things here. And Kate, you may want to... I thought I shouted loud enough. You might want to correct me a little bit. So the urgent treatment centres are a national term. So it's a national thing that we're implementing everywhere, and it's a must be done. We're doing it. We have to do it. The big thing about this is we want to do it for the right reasons in Sheffield. So the minor injuries unit and the walk-in centre become our urgent treatment centres. And there is the big debate about how do we make sure in this city we provide the right access in the right places. And there are, as St John has articulated, there are lots of ways of looking at that. So what we need, I think what's really helpful from this conversation is hearing the different things that are going to impact on people. So
I don't think as a city we would want to see everybody travelling to Chesterfield instead of Sheffield. We need to make sure where we site those urgent treatment centres is the right place to give the right access for the right things. If we choose to do the urgent treatment centre, which manages that for adults in the, at the Northern General, we need to be satisfied that we've responded to how do people get there. And that's a helpful feedback in terms of what happens if I can't use public transport. It's not just about that. And we also need to satisfy that when you get there, you can access it. And a lot of people, there is a danger that we overload the ambulance service with doing that. And equally the same for children. So, and I think that's why we've set out options around the urgent treatment centres, because it is the most difficult thing to do. So, it's one of the most helpful things to have the feedback in when we're having these conversations.
That's not part of the proposals at the moment, but clearly if people include that in their feedback, then that is something that we will have to consider.
It's a hospital. You have the support, you have the backup, the logistics. You've got everything there. The overheads will be no different, I suppose, if somebody else is using part of it.
So as St John...
So, as
St John said, St John, come on in a minute. Sorry, I'm mic'd up. We did consider having the urgent treatment centre at the minor injuries unit, and that was one of the options that we looked at as part of the process. That was discounted fairly early on for several reasons. The main ones being that it's not logistically feasible in terms of particularly the amount of space that we would need at the Hallamshire for the amount of activity that we would need to see there for the minor injuries and some of the illness patients that choose to be seen there. And it would also mean that patients would have to continue travelling to a different site, i.e. the Northern General, if what they think is a minor injury turns out to be more major. It does happen now, and that's part of the duplication and part of the confusion in the system that we are trying to stop and make better for patients. St John, was there anything you wanted to add?
Yeah. It's another duplication thing about illness. So the reason why nationally urgent treatment centres are coming in, and they're recommended actually that they are in front of or co-located with the major emergency department. Obviously, for most cities, they don't split children and adults. They have hospitals that treat both. We're quite unusual as a city in doing that. But if A&E is there, people will pitch up to it, and they'll pitch up to it without an accident, without an emergency, and they'll pitch up because they're ill. The place where that does happen the most in terms of numbers is the Northern General. And so it gives you a way to have primary care treating those patients rather than A&E treating those patients with illness. Okay, so it's a way of taking the illness cohort that attend A&E when they shouldn't, but they do, you know, it's I'm not having a go. They just, you know, it's one of the things that people do. How do we manage that? And we manage them there. And obviously we can do that for the, you know, no child would turn up at Northern General doing that, but they might turn up at the children's doing that, and then we'd be able to give them a minor illness treatment there.
Nikki, could I just ask you to clarify something you said, because I saw a couple of members of the audience look a bit worried when you said it.
Okay.
That urgent treatment centres are a national requirement. I saw a couple of people flinch when you said that. Can you perhaps reassure people that that doesn't... We can choose how we do that, so it doesn't mean that this consultation is a fait accompli in the sham. We're not being dictated to about how we do that.
No.
I did notice a couple of people flinch.
No, there will be a series of national requirements that, as always, that come down. And we have been very clear in Sheffield that we're not going to just implement what we're told to implement. We're going to take the principles of what we're being asked to be done and respond to it in a way that meets Sheffield's needs. So, which is why we're having the consultation. And, in fact, the timing of our consultation, because we... These are things that we've been asked to do into the process. It's not something that we've responded to. We were already well on the path. So the timing of this consultation has been fantastic because we've been able to say, well, how does that fit with what we were going to do and link it in? But the term urgent treatment centre is used simply because nationally they need to see urgent treatment centre. And there'll be other things that we used. We're tied to the term because it enables us to respond nationally and say we've done what you wanted, but actually it will be very much about what we need to do locally.
Thank you. Did that help the people who were a bit concerned about that?
It's almost like a minor injuries unit by any other name.
Mm. Or whatever you just to fit in whatever you want to call it. You could call it a lot of different things.
Can I just see, some people haven't asked questions yet, and we've got plenty of time for people to ask more questions. The gentleman towards the back.
Clearly this is about integration and working together to maximise the benefit for the patients. You've had some significant challenges, it sounds like, amongst the CCG around the minor injury unit. What would you say your other two major challenges have been?
Right. St. John and then Nikki, do you want to reply? And then I might pick on the other two afterwards.
So I would say neighbourhoods is the thing that springs to mind because it's quite a big shift for GPs to not just be focused on their own practice, but to work in a wider practice. And it's a journey that's been going on for a long, long time. I was lucky, I had a sabbatical in New Zealand of 12 years ago and could see that we had to start working together. And, you know, what's happened is that it's been clear that practices will be much better working together in terms of, you know, trying to bring in all the other staff that could work in primary care as a way to make that happen, to make that possible. But getting the GPs by and large to see that and see beyond their own practices, that has been a real big challenge. And I would say this iteration, this attempt is going to stick. I think we've had lots of previous attempts. This one's going to, I've not been involved in all of them by any means, but I think this one's going to stick. So I would say persuading GPs about neighbourhoods, run just their own practice.
One of the reasons why we're having the challenge with neighbourhoods, and I would agree with St. John, that's the second greatest challenge, is because practices either struggle to see why they would benefit from working with someone else. That's a huge challenge in the first place. You know, why do we do this? Or really, really can totally see why they would benefit. So we've got lots of practices who say, yeah, we can see how that's going to happen. But to be able to do this, we would need to have access to the full patient record. We would need to have access to be able to book the slots. We'd need to trust, you know, who's got responsibility for the patient. And one of the reasons that the implementation timeframes for this are longer is to be able to respond to that. And in fact, so the third bit, but still around that we're grappling with is 2020 long enough to be able to respond to some of those things? Because some of them aren't about practices or even indeed us being able to put things in place. Some of these are around the IT solutions. So rightly so, when all of the work's been done on the engagement and on what needs to happen, we've identified that there's quite a lot of stuff that would happen before we can do any of this. And a lot of that is about access to records, how we communicate, how does the triage system work. Where it can work, it works brilliantly, but there's huge stuff to do.
Is there enough money in the budget to be able to deliver?
One of the great things about this is there's a lot of transformation money coming down. So we are able to channel the transformation money specifically into that. So we've already got programs. Regardless of what happens with this, part of the supporting practices to be sustainable and resilient will be supporting them to work at scale and more flexibly. So we're already on with a program of work that will help that. And it's how we already know that it's going to take quite a long time to be able to put some of those enabling things in place.
Nikki, would it be worth you just, because I'm not sure everybody would know this, explaining how we have money and then how there are other pots of money that we can bid for. Is it worth just
Thanks for making that simple thing.
Can Nikki just answer this and then we'll get your question?
I don't mind taking both.
All GPs are on ball with this. Because by the sounds of it, it sounds to me as if you're having to persuade them or push them.
Do you have enough GPs?
Shall I answer the funding thing first and then let St. John answer that? So in terms of the money, in terms of the money, we've got the core funding for practice to do core access and their routine, you know, in hours access. We've got extra money that we offer in terms of services that we want to commission locally. So things that we want, we think locally there's a need for extra services in primary care, and there's a pot of money that we can do that. And then there are a series of other funding opportunities through national pots of money that become available, regional pots of money that become available, some of the stuff that we're doing around how we work differently as a system and release money to support primary care. So there are all sorts of things. And all of that at the moment is predominantly focused on how do we support primary care and community services. I could answer the GP bit.
Could Terry answer the GP bit? And then can we come to you?
Okay. So I'll just come back to the point there. I think the point was, are the GPs on board or are they being forced into it? So this comes back to what neighbourhoods are about. So that the neighbourhoods are small associations of practices. And as St. John said, they're roughly based on around patient populations of around 30 to 35,000. And if you kind of look at these at-scale models in other places in the UK, but other places internationally, that seems to be the number at which things are best sustainable. What I would say is that the neighbourhoods are at various different stages of developing in Sheffield. There is support from the local medical committee. That's a body that represents GPs locally. They are supportive of us working at scale in this way. And most practices are supportive of that idea. They understand that this is something that needs to be done in order for services to carry on and be sustainable in the future. So yeah, GPs are on board with the principle that, you know, that this is the way we're going to offer the best care to our patients. The difficulty comes in making that realization happen. So that there's a drive there, there's a need, and there's a want to do it. And I think one of the important things that will come out of this is making sure that as a CCG, as a commissioning body, that there is adequate support for those neighbourhoods to make that happen, whether that be funding, whether that be management input, whether that be some, you know, transformational changes to enable that vision to happen.
Is it worth somebody also explaining that the CCG isn't this body that sits remotely from GPs, and we've got all sorts of networks and structures to make sure that we involve the GP practices in our decision making. I don't know who wants to answer
that.
I shouldn't have asked the question, should I? We've got 8 GPs who are elected to sit on our board, and they either represent the 4 quarters of the city, of which there are neighbourhoods structures within it. 4 of the GPs on the board are citywide appointments. We have locality managers who are working with the practices all the time. We have regular, I think 4 monthly or so, meetings to which all GPs and practices are invited in the city. We have learning events on a regular basis. Sorry? The Neighbourhood Learning Networks. And those people who work in the CCG are out in the practices and out in the community and out in the neighbourhoods and the hospitals all the time talking about these issues. So we're not making decisions and presenting a fait accompli to GPs. They're part of the decision making. Obviously, I'm not a GP. What I would say is that many are really keen to see working in different ways because they don't want to work themselves into a frenzy, really, that, you know, they can't carry on. inevitably, in any big system, there'll be a couple of GPs who don't see it. And that's how it always is. But so far, I think people are very much on board. Would that be fair?
I think of all the of all the consultation discussions that we've had, so we've worked with the four areas of the city to develop these options, as we've worked with some of the providers that work in the city as well. They all helped inform the options that we've taken, that we've brought out to the consultation. But then we're also undertaking, whilst we're doing the public consultation meetings, we're also consulting with all the GP practices and the local providers across the city as well, in sort of in the background during the same time period. So we've been and talked to all four areas of the city, and we're going again as formally as part of the consultation to hear all of their views. And so far, I think the vast majority have agreed with the principles that we're proposing in terms of improving access to general practice and making sure that if you need an urgent appointment for minor illness, that you are seen within 24 hours or in the same day. They all agree that's the right thing to do. Some of them have got concerns about how we're going to do that and what it means for them as individual practitioners and what it means in terms of the changes that they or their staff within the practice will have to make. But I think that's natural, because in any big or small change, you are always going to get a range of opinions. And part of what we will need to do, if the CCG makes the decision in March to go ahead on the basis of what we've proposed, and if it chooses not to because of the feedback that we've had and we need to think differently, part of the next phase will be about working with the practices and the providers to make all of that happen. And as the others have already said, that's why we've given ourselves sort of 2.5 years to implement some of this stuff, because it's not, it's, if it was easy, we should have already done it.
Yes, you and then you, is that okay?
Oh, just a quick one. Obviously, if all the networks or hubs or whatever you want to call them are going to work together cooperatively, they'd have to have access to patients' electronic records from the other practices. What's the situation in terms of all the practices being up to speed with having everything having been transferred to electronic store?
Yeah. So all practices are electronic. I would say that. I'm just waiting for someone to challenge me. So they are all electronic. And I think one of the, so again, so we've already been talking about this, about how we work at scale. One of the challenges isn't the electronic bit. It's about how we share between systems. And we've got two different systems in the city. So some of the work that's already underway but will take time to achieve is how do we get those systems to talk to each other, and how do we do that? So we've got a list of things that would need to be in place for doctors to very safely work together in a different way.
And Nikki, could you add to that issues around patient confidentiality? Because there's one thing about sharing records, but I'm sure people in this room and beyond would want assurance.
Yeah,
about that.
On the list of things are information governance, confidentiality, thinking through what opt-in and opt-out would opt-out would be needed, and again, it's you know, the continuity of care is in there. When do you need to see your own GP? When do you not? And there's all sorts of contractual stuff that we need to work out. You know, what of this is linked into if you had gone to a minor injuries unit or to an out of hours GP, which, you know, you would have seen somebody anyway, and this would be better because you'd see somebody who had access to your full record rather than meeting you and no access. But it's very, there are a number of things that would need to be put in place to make sure that all happens very, very safely, and that's at the top of our agenda.
I'd just add to that, obviously we're in a process of that happening. It has been done elsewhere, so we know it can be done. You know, this isn't, you know, a new territory, it isn't, you know, we're trying to invent something. If you go over the Pennines, you go to Liverpool, there is a complete information sharing system there that works safely. They've gone a step further. In fact, the hospital can see the GP records and vice versa. Whether that's something we plan in the future, I don't know. But that's kind of beyond the scope of this consultation. But yeah, it's in the pipeline.
Thank you.
Yes.
What are the implications in terms of neighbourhood working on surgeries budgets and finance. My understanding is that there's a global sum payment made to practices based on patient numbers. Now, I'm registered at one particular surgery, but over the course of a year, for all sorts of reasons, I go to a neighbourhood surgery or a satellite hub. Does that have any implication financially on my home surgery?
No. It's a short answer.
Go so, long answer.
No, you don't have to encourage me because I can talk a long time. No. They will continue to get their allocations. They have a registered population unless there's a reason why two practices might merge, because some practices will struggle and get to a point where potentially at some point in the future they're not viable alone. So that might happen, but they would still be an individual practice. They will still get the money that they're entitled to. And then in addition, we intend to support neighbourhood working and practices. So if anything, there's additional money there to help practices work better and ideally help them use the pot of money they get to more effectively and efficiently so they can get extra resources in with what they do have. Yeah, they do. I think the big thing with GPs is they're very keen to work through how do we make it work. And it is the difficulty. It's we all know that where we want to go, it's how do we work together now to get there.
If you get there.
We are going to get there.
Well, then there's no point in consulting.
No, so just to be very clear, that's about how primary care works, not about how the urgent care model will work. So that's a slightly different thing, but it fits with. So the urgent care consultation proposal, what we're doing with primary care and to support primary care and practices be resilient and sustainable for the future would support what's being proposed in the urgent care consultation. And as Mandy said, oh, I can't remember where I was going, well, you said something at the beginning around, yes, the primary care has had nationally a crisis in terms of GPs recruitment because there haven't been as many trained, in terms of retaining GPs in relation to actually practice nurses and even practice managers. So Sheffield has very fortuitously, probably because it's such an amazing place, managed to be reasonably sheltered from that, but it doesn't mean we haven't got the same problem. We're very clear that if we don't do something now, general practice in Sheffield will struggle. So that's why we've got other stuff going on, which very fortunately complements what's being proposed.
Yeah, thank you. We've got 50 minutes left. Has anybody else got questions to ask?
Well, I don't monopolize it, but it's interesting.
No, please.
If you've got the UTC at Northern General, and you've got loads of people coming in without appointments to accident and emergency, how is it going to be structured? Is there going to be a filter then to take them into a different direction? And just so they have a consultation with a primary care nurse or triage or someone to say accident emergency, UTC.
And where is this going to be seen? Are you going to build something at Northern General?
So as it stands at the moment, from the beginning of October, both the Children's Hospital and at the Northern General, we have now got a filter in place in the emergency department. So if you present at the moment it's only running at certain hours of the day, depending on which site it is, because if you go into the emergency department with a minor illness, you will be streamed into the tent. You know, you'll be signposted to a service in a different part of the hospital. So at the Children's Hospital, it's kind of down a corridor and sort of a couple of minutes down a corridor. At the Northern General, it's under the helipad. I don't know if some of you have seen. So near the A&E department, they've built a new helipad, and there's the out-of-hours GP service currently sits underneath that. So the patients are being streamed there at the moment, and that will continue. In terms of where we think the urgent treatment centres will be sited, at the Northern, we think it's likely to be at that in the service under the helipad, because we think there's enough capacity there. And at the Children's, we need to have some conversations with the Children's, but we think there's sufficient space within the combination of their new building and what they've currently got to see the volume of patients. I think what it's important to stress, and part of the reason why we would really like people to fill out the questionnaires, is that we've made some assumptions about where people want to be treated. And we have assumed, rightly or wrongly, that patients that are currently being seen at the walk-in centre with minor illness, or those patients that are currently going to the minor injuries unit with minor illness problems, because we know there's a proportion of patients that go there with illness rather than injury, we're assuming that they would far rather be treated in their local area by their own GP practice or one of those groups or the neighbourhoods. So we think that the volume of patients that will need to be seen in the urgent treatment centres will be far less than currently is being seen at the minor injuries unit and the walk-in centre. But that's one of the questions that we've got in the questionnaire, because if actually we've made that assumptions wrong and lots of people would continue to go there, then, you know, we need to understand that now and make sure that we build enough capacity into those urgent treatment centres. But based on our current assumptions and the initial feedback that's coming through from the questionnaires that we've had so far, the majority of people are saying they'd far rather be treated in their local areas if they can get access within 24 hours if they've got minor illness.
Okay. Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Where are you getting all of your volume data from? Because I'm hearing from some people here that they're making choices as to where to go. So some of them are going to Chesterfield. Are you picking up that you've got volume going outside of the county and making sure that they're featured in your numbers?
Kate, do you want to start with that?
Yeah. So we haven't specifically looked at services outside of the city, other than we understand how many patients are going to the Rotherham Walk-in Centre, as it was before it's moved to the Rotherham A&E department. We have looked at data given to us by the providers, so by the Sheffield Teaching Hospital and the Sheffield Children's Hospital, that currently provide the walk-in centre, the minor injuries unit, the eye clinic, and the A&E departments, because obviously we've talked about the fact that some people go to A&E when they've got minor illness or minor injury because they can't get in anywhere else or they don't know where to go, so they go there. So we've undertaken quite a lot of analysis of that information. We've talked to the providers, we've talked to the GPs, we've undertaken an audit of GP practices to understand, kind of on a typical day, how many patients ring the practice or walk into the practice and ask for an urgent appointment. And we've made some assumptions based on some of those numbers. And that's partly why we've got the questions in the questionnaire, because we're conscious that we've made those assumptions and we want to test those out with the general public to see whether you think in the same way that we think you think. Yeah.
St. John, is there anything you've got to add to that?
I was actually thinking about the previous question about how do people know where to walk in. So in some places they have like a green A&E and a red A&E, and if you walk in, you walk in through the green A&E, which would be in front of the under the helipad, an ambulance would take you to the red A&E. But there's lots of questions, and the streaming, as soon as you introduce streaming, you introduce clinical risk, because people have to make a decision about how ill you are. So where's the best place to put that? So I would say that's part of what, how the service would be developed as to what would happen with that. I think in terms of the numbers, and I think Kate's the best in the numbers, that we would know Rotherham. I don't think we've looked at Chesterfield at all. Interesting, we know the numbers of some, say, we've seen where people who use the walk-in centre are registered or based, and it's generally closely around, and also quite a lot in London. So we probably, because they're students who haven't registered who have come up, which is this, when I mentioned earlier about the money that we're not bringing to Sheffield because of that.
I mean, could somebody reassure people in the room that we have access to an immense amount of activity and data, so we can look at patterns? Kate, yeah, you're probably best placed.
Yeah, so we have, obviously, you know, I've just talked about the fact that we get access to a lot of information. It's not patient-level information, I hasten to add, but we get anonymised information about all sorts of things, and we've spent quite a lot of time looking at the patients that are going to the A&E department, that are going to the walk-in centre and the minor injuries unit, understanding where they live in the city, what conditions that we think they're going with, whether we think they're appropriate or not. We've factored a lot of that information in. I thought it's just worth mentioning that before we could go out to public consultation, and in fact before the CCG could make a decision to go out to consultation, we had to develop a case for change
that we had to take to NHS England, and part of their role was to assess whether we had undertaken, kind of gone through due process and considered sufficiently what the public have already think about what the issues are, looking at all the modelling that we've undertaken, think about the workforce that we're proposing, and they've kind of really checked everything that we've done so far to make sure that when we go out to consultation, we're proposing options that are viable. Because what we can't do, and what NHS England wouldn't have let us do, was to take out an option to the public, go through the consultation process, and then realise at a point in time afterwards that actually we couldn't implement that proposal, because that's not fair and that's not part of the consultation. That's not the right way to do consultation. So they checked and confirmed that they felt like we had undertaken sufficient and robust processes to ensure that the options that we're proposing can be implemented, albeit there's going to be some challenges with some of those, as we've just talked about, but that we can implement them and that they are the right things to do in Sheffield, we believe, and part of the consultation is to test whether the public agrees with us on that.
Thank you. The lady at the front. I think a lot of this activity could be shared with the public. I mean, the public really need to know the basis on which you are shutting the walk-in centre. I mean, as I understand it, the walk-in centre was established where it was, where it is, to supply a lot of students, individuals who don't have permanent practices and who are here today and gone tomorrow and so on. And that was one of the primary reasons that the walk-in centre should act as a GP, apart from the general accident emergency side. But one would be interested in the numbers of people who turn up at minor injuries with minor illness. How many? I mean, they can't be admitted to the Hallamshire. Why turn up there?
Two questions there, is it? Terry, do you want to answer the first one about students?
The two points to that question. One of them is about how many people are going to minor injuries, and I'm probably looking at Kate to answer that because she'll have the figures and the numbers. The first point around sort of having a minor illness walk-in service, that was something that was each NHS area across the country was asked to do several years back by government at the time to introduce these walk-in systems, as opposed to it being something specifically cited there for students. There are student practices available in the city. I work in one of them. Certainly, we would really encourage students to register with the GP whilst they're here in Sheffield. Often, I mean, I see this on a weekly basis, sometimes on a daily basis, where a student has got a more long-term problem and they've attended the walk-in centre to have that treated. And unfortunately, you know, walk-in centres are there for minor problems. They're not there for long-term problems. So in essence, the students then have to come back and be seen all over again and explain their story all over again. And really, again, if you look at what we're doing, if we simplify you kind of what's being offered by GP surgeries, what we're proposing is that those things can be seen by GP surgeries. Actually, we've sort of avoided that duplication in the system and made it easier. I look after students exclusively. We don't have any other patients. The majority of them are students. And what I hear from them is actually that, you know, they've come from another city where they've got GPs and they've got A&E departments and they come to Sheffield, and actually it's really confusing. There's a raft of different places they could go. The other point is we have a lot of students who come to Sheffield from other countries, they're here legitimately. They often get very confused about how the NHS operates. And again, you know, they've paid to use the NHS while they're here. And again, there are so many different options for them to choose from that actually it just becomes something that's impossible for them. So we would like to be able to say to all patients, really, if you've got an emergency, you go to A&E. If you don't have an emergency but your problem is urgent, then you give your GP a call and we'll get you to the right place.
And there was
there are a lot of single people who are not students. Young professionals or layabouts or, you know.
Homeless.
There are a lot in that area. The single population must be very dense.
So just in terms of homelessness, which has been raised, so certainly when we were first looking at it, we thought there'd be a far higher proportion of homeless people treated at the walking centre, but that didn't prove to be the case when we looked and dug a little deeper. And I would actually argue if there's one group of people who you really want to have long-term follow-up and long-term care with, then homeless people will be them. It's not just a short-term thing. You really want a long-term continuity of care in that situation. And so we do have practices that, you know, particularly look after homeless people, and we would much rather see them able to do that than see funding going elsewhere for a one-off thing.
But a lot of homeless people don't want that long-term care. I volunteered with the homeless group for quite a while, but a lot of homeless people turn up at A&E.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's an argument to have an urgent treatment centre there. Because they will do, because it's there. It's the point we made before that if it's there, people will go. And rather than complain about that, we've got to find a way to treat them, which is an argument to have. Let's have primary care services there. Let's be able to deal with both minor illness and minor injuries in front of A&E.
And
better than being at A&E.
Said a couple of moments ago, was it Terry? I can't remember. There's some practices in the city that have a focus on supporting people who are homeless. Yeah. And they work in very innovative ways to get around some of the issues about people not embracing kind of long-term care and support. I've just realised, you're Rosemary, aren't you?
Yes,
I
think you're Mandy.
Yes. We used to be on the Community Health Council
together.
We got a long way
back.
Rosemary asked a question about numbers of people with minor illnesses going to the minor injuries unit. And Kate, you were going to pick
right.
that up.
I mean, what's the breakdown of the health unit?
So last year, about 18,000 patients attended the minor injuries unit in total.
Yes,
That's set in the context of approximately 600,000 urgent GP appointments being seen within the city. So if you compare the two, it's quite a small population. We've done some work with both internally and with the teaching hospital who manage the minor injuries unit, and we think that between about 10 and 40% of the patients that attend are likely to have minor illness rather than minor injuries.
Mental illness?
No, it's largely physical illness symptoms rather than mental illness, but obviously some people may have both. And we want to do some more work with the Trust to understand that in more detail and refine that, but we know that it's a proportion of patients who could be being seen in their local practices in the future.
Yeah. Thank you.
Further questions?
Mandy, I just wanted to explain something. When we were talking about the walk-in centre, that we did do an awful lot of work with some of the groups of people you've mentioned to understand who was using it and what they needed from urgent care. So people that we wouldn't normally, who wouldn't come to meetings like this, for example. So we did specific work with homeless communities, some of the refugees, asylum seekers, and we did this through some of the charities that work with them, the support groups, that we could make sure their needs were taken into account. And in the data, I think, that we had from the Walk-in Centre, it was, as a lot of people have said, we've heard that was set up to deal, you know, help with vulnerable people in the city who wouldn't access services. And the highest usage is, I mean, Kate will know this better than I do, but the highest usages were students and young professionals. There were very high use of people going there who said, because they couldn't get a GP appointment. Most people who go there drove. I'm just giving you some of the highlights to sort of understand the usage of it. And there's also been quite a high number of people who go there for a second opinion, because they perhaps don't like what they've heard or want a different opinion, and who are going. So this is back to some of the duplication. But what we really wanted to understand as well was those particular groups that we're talking about, oh, have we got that right? So St John had raised that right at the beginning about the point he made about the homeless people. That's not the best way for them to get the care they need, and how we do that. And it isn't, as you say, people may not want to go there, but actually what we heard was they just want to be seen when they need to be seen. And some of the reason they only went there was if a charity or one of the support groups took them there, and otherwise they were going to A&E. But if they could go to one of these drop-in clinics, they were actually more comfortable with that. Particularly people also who with substance misuse problems, again, which will overlap with some of the homeless community. But there is something about wanting to be in what they felt was a safe environment where they could not be judged and get the treatment they needed. And again, that went very much back to not the walk-in centre. That's why they weren't going there, because they'd rather have some kind of continuity or a service at a place they felt safe. So just thought it was useful to understand some of the work that's gone on behind the scenes. And there is a lot more detail about that available on our website if you want, but just because I know that's things that have come up.
Thank you. I'm aware not everybody's spoken yet, and I'm not putting pressure on people to speak if they don't want to. And I'm not trying to stop the people who've already asked questions. But anybody got any more questions they want to ask? Please do. We've got ages yet if you want it and need it.
I've got a more general one, not on this, so I'll just hang fire.
Right, okay. Well, thank you.
You talk about people, we've heard the stories about people ringing Treble One and giving wrong advice and all the rest of it, and you say that that's an avenue to pursue the people with appointments of some sort. And you also suggest, well, ring your GP, get through and book an appointment. In a lot of cases, it's very difficult to even get through to a GP. Never mind making an appointment. But what I understand in the papers, and it may be true or not so true, is that the Treble One facility isn't successful really in its own way.
Right. So you've got concerns about us. About one getting through on the phone and two using 111 to get through on the phone.
From your starting point, it's all about GPs, grouping GPs, assessing people, filtering those out, moving them on to the right and appropriate treatment. If you don't start at that point and get that right,
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. That's helpful. Kerry, do you want to start?
There's no answer as such to that, because you know we're still at a consultation stage. That is something that we're aware of, actually, about going back. How do we support GPs working at a neighbourhood to be able to make that happen? So there's something. That there's more work to be done. And again, Kate's alluded to the fact that certainly, this is not something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to take a lot of planning. The second point about 111 services is, I know at the moment, the majority of the calls are not answered by anybody with clinical training. One of the other things as a CCG that we're doing is looking at that 111 contract to ensure that a higher number of people who call 111 will actually speak to someone who's clinically trained, as opposed to kind of go through a call centre algorithm. So that kind of answers that point in a way. But it's not something that's just going to quickly happen. It's something that we need to make sure is in place before these changes could even be possible.
And it's on our list of things to work through.
Yeah.
If we go ahead with.
So we're really clear that practices need more phone lines. They need to be manned all of the time so that you can get through. Practices need to think about the way that they provide what we call triage, so the conversation that you have to assess where you need to go. And that's one of the areas where we think actually we'll need quite a lot more staff than we've currently got, because we think if we have more people having those phone calls, we will get people to the right place first time more often than not. So a large part of the focus will be on making sure that no matter what time you ring the practice during opening hours,
you can get through to somebody who will be able to triage you appropriately and direct you in the right place. And as Terry said, 111 in the 111 is changing nationally. It's one of the things Nikki was talking about with the national must be dones. That is one of the national must be dones, is that 111 in effect go back to a bit more like NHS Direct was. For anybody that used that in the past, so NHS, so basically the majority of the phone calls being answered by a clinician rather than by a non-clinician, and they'd be able to direct you but also assess you and get you to the right place first time. And that's partly why some people will continue to use 111, and it's not something that we want to kind of discourage them from if that's the route that they're used to. And clearly out of hours, patients are directed to 111. So we're clear that we need to get the 111 service working how we want it to in the future, as well as supporting GP practices to ensure that when you do need to contact them, that you can get through, the phone is answered quickly, or somebody will deal with your query quickly. Not how it is now.
The lady towards the back. Okay.
Disposal of that call goes to the right clinical resource. Mm-hmm. You talked about earlier one of the major challenges that the CCG you found is your IT infrastructure. My understanding around 111 is that a pivotal part of that is the directory of services. So has that been linked into this project?
So that is what we've already...
Lots of nods from the table over there.
We've already got a directory of service in place in Sheffield, as has every area. So the directory of services, basically, at a very simple level, it's a list of all the services that are available in local communities, so that when a member of staff at 111 answers the phone, they can kind of pull up this list of directory of services and identify what's the most appropriate place for you to be sent to. So that's already in place, but clearly, if we make the changes that we're proposing, we'll need to make some quite radical changes to our local DOS to reflect those changes and ensure that the staff that work in 111 are available and know what they are. We're also looking at, as part of the national requirements around 111, how we use local clinicians to answer far more of those phone calls. So at the moment, in our local area, the staff that answer the phones generally are based up in Wakefield. Part of the national solution is about integrating out-of-hour services locally with the 111 call centres. And we believe in Sheffield that we want more staff that work in Sheffield to be answering those phone calls, because the staff in Sheffield know Sheffield. They know what, you know, they don't then have to rely on looking at a computer algorithm or a list of information on what services are there. Actually, they know the services that are available in Sheffield, and they know more of the patients in Sheffield. So that is part of our direction of travel.
Thank you. Terry, you wanted to add to that.
I think Kate's kind of addressed that point, but I think one of the things is, you know, we often, you know, GPs are very much part of the communities they work in, and where we would be working in neighbourhoods, for instance, you know, most of the GPs will know what services are available there on their patch. So actually having that local knowledge when you're triaging those telephone calls, you know, knowing potentially where the nearest optician is, and, you know, when you're talking to patients that you probably know, or, you know the area with, it may make that a little bit easier. You know, but what we're suggesting is, in these proposals, you know, the core of it is actually getting people to services closer to where they live. So yes, there does need to be a directory of services, but what I wouldn't want to be doing for someone with an urgent eye problem, you know, is I'm in the city centre. I wouldn't really want to be sending them out to Crystal Peaks for an eye appointment. I would want to know that, you know, I know where my local urgent opticians are going to be, and that's where I can send my patients to. And again, you know, with the out of hours part of that, if you get people who know the local patch, obviously it makes it a bit easier than someone trying to explain something that you know, maybe only seen Sheffield on Google Maps.
So we need to work through that. because there are national rules that we need to abide by in terms of competition and choice and working through all of that. I think what we're clear about is that the staff that work in the services that we've currently got in the city, we need all of those staff, and we think that there are enough jobs out there for them within the city. What we can't guarantee is whether they will be able to stay working with the current providers or whether they'll need to move providers or go to new providers. And that'll be a process that we'll need to go through once we've made whatever decision we need to make.
Okay, could you just be a bit clearer what you mean by providers in this? Do you mean GP practices? Do you mean hospitals? Do you mean private companies? Just be helpful to know.
So a combination of... When we talk about providers, we generally think hospitals. So the Sheffield Teaching Hospital, the Children's Hospital and the Care Trust are our three big providers in Sheffield. But we've also got the walk-in centre, and that's currently delivered by a private company called One Medicare. But then sometimes, and I know this is really confusing, we kind of fall into the trap of talking about providers being GP practices or opticians or pharmacists as well. So it kind of depends on the context, but in its broadest sense, we're talking about all of the hospitals in the city and the other providers that work in the city, so deliver particularly the walk-in centre, as well as the GP practices, opticians and the pharmacists. Does that help?
So GPs that are sitting on the CCG, is there not a conflict of interest?
Yes.
There is indeed, and for that reason, none of the GPs who sit on the CCG will be involved in the decision-making from the consultation.
Incredibly strict rules about managing conflict of interest, and I'm one of the four lay members, and one of the lay members has responsibility to oversee conflict of interest, and his background is in finance, audit, those kind of things, and he is very, very hot on these things, and some of our board meetings are a bit like a fandango, you know, with people going out of the room and not being part of the debate, so we do manage that conflict
just
of interest.
For all, because it's not going to just be this where GPs have a conflict of interest, it's across a lot of things. And we have a separate committee from the board that makes decisions called the Primary Care Co-Commissioning Committee, on which there are no GPs as voting members. So there's a GP input, but when it comes to decision making, the GPs are not allowed to have any influence. And so that's how anything that has this kind of impact will go through that committee.
I mean, CCGs were developed when the health service was reorganised 7 or 8 years ago now. And the desire was to involve GPs and other clinicians in developing health services. And so that's how CCGs came about. What we've discovered over those 7 years is it's a lot more complicated than that. And conflicts of interest has to be managed. Because we work in a context where there are competition and collaboration rules that go way beyond the NHS. And we have to manage all that.
Could I just ask Kate? You know, you said the walk-in clients usually came by car. Where are they going to park them?
So we recognise that parking is an issue, and lots of people have already told us that. So it is something that we need to look at. I suppose part of it goes back to the fact that actually, the majority of the patients that are attending the walk-in centre, we think are going because they can't get an appointment at their local GP practice. So if we can ensure that they can get that access within 24 hours, we think that the majority of those patients that currently go to the walk-in centre will actually choose to be seen in their local practice. So in terms of where we site those the offer to patients in those local groups of practice, one of the things that we need to be really mindful of is making sure not only that those practices are accessible by public transport, but they've also got sufficient car parking for those patients that will travel. Mm. Clearly, for the patients that do have minor injuries, and some of those patients that may still choose to go to the urgent treatment centre for their minor illness conditions, parking will be a factor, and that's a conversation that we need to work through in terms of what proportion of patients do we think will go to the urgent treatment centres, what proportion do we think will travel by car as opposed to public transport? And then what does that mean in terms of the impact on both parking at the Northern General, but also the impact on the residents around the local area of the Northern? Because we can't just, you know, for their sakes, we can't just focus on making sure that we've got enough parking at the Northern. We also need to factor in the impact on them as well. So that's something that we are taking on board.
Because the car parking at Northern General is terrible. Terrible. Sometimes you go for an X-ray or something. You have to wait for somebody to come out before you can go in.
Yeah. As, some of us have to travel quite regularly to the Northern General for meetings. Yeah, there's times of day where you need to go and there's times of day where you need to try and avoid. So, I completely empathise. It is difficult.
At the governing body in some of our committees, we've had conversations sometimes about how frustrated we are about the lack of influence we've had to date on public transport routes. And, you know, we've said we've got to try and, what's it called, the transport executive, you know, get them to understand as well. I mean, I know they're working with commercial bus companies, but we need to have bus routes that work for local people.
I think it's just with regard to with public transport and influence over bus routes and so on. The working relationship the CCG has now with the local authority is something that is formalised. So, you know, in terms of being able to work very closely with the people that make decisions about transport and so on, it's something that we will be able to have a much greater influence over, that kind of separation between health systems and local authorities is blurred now. It's much closer.
We've probably got about 10 or 15 minutes left, so please, if you've got questions, do ask them.
Could I go off the tangent slightly?
You can, as long as it's...
When someone was talking about, you know, phoning GPs and making appointments, our GP is very good and you can book appointments online. Obviously, not if you want to be an urgent one, yes. You want to do that. But otherwise, yes, you can book online, 2 weeks ahead. Great. What proportion of GPs in Sheffield, have you any idea what proportion are offering that service? Because I talk to other people and say, oh, we can't do it at all.
We do know that, but we've all had an anxious look at each other and don't know the statistic off the top of our head.
It's such a good idea.
Are you an EMIS practice, Terry?
We are.
Because I know, are you system online?
Yes.
So all System 1 practices have the ability to do that and open it up, and they do it to different degrees. Can EMIS do it as well?
EMIS can as well.
So, and it is an individual, we can't influence practices to do that. It's an individual preference, and it does link into some of that confidence about control over capacity.
We
do have that information. Yeah. We just haven't got it at the
fingertips. I will add to that the GP contract last year actually mandated that practices needed to be able to offer online systems, and there's a time phase where all of the online components have got to be there. So it isn't just booking appointments, it's other things like being able to order your repeat prescriptions, to be able to see your laboratory results online. So all practices should be able to offer that, but there's a phase in over, you know, sort of how quickly they offer everything. The other bit there is perhaps some of the online bits are potentially helpful. Again, looking at our specific patient population that we've got, we've looked at this and thought, actually, well, if we want people to ring up, how are we going to manage that as an online system? So we can still continue to offer planned care to people. So if people need to come in and have their diabetes looked at, or their blood pressure, or their follow-up, they can still continue to manage that as an online booking. And we've looked at having a completely separate list where people book online for their telephone triage. So they're not necessarily having to wait in the queue, but they know between 9 and 9.05 the GP is going to call me.
Kate, is it worth reiterating a point you made in your presentation about this isn't about changing the booked appointments? So I wonder if you could just reiterate that.
Yeah, so we are clear that we are not planning on making any changes to the way patients book their what we call planned appointments. So when you want to book an appointment in advance, whether that's a couple of days in advance or maybe 2 or 3 weeks in advance, we're not proposing to make any changes to that. Other than that, we think that if the GPs work at scale, we think it should have a positive impact on the length of time some of the practices have as their current waiting time for planned appointments. So at my practice, I book online because it's loads quicker than trying to ring up, and I can see all the available appointments. But more often than not, there's a 3-week wait for my first available appointment. We think that by working at scale, so by the group's practices working together, we should be able to reduce that waiting time for lots of practices where they're currently struggling with that.
A very useful practice in our surgery is that you can speak to the doctor on the phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's the advantage of having access to the notes, of course. And that's worked extremely well, actually. Mm. So if you could encourage GPs to speak on the phone with their patients.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of the first step in the new process that we want to implement.
Yes, well, I mean, you know, prescribing something or other, which you've had before and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Mine's more of a general point. I've been on our surgery's patient group for almost 2 years now and have spent most of these 2 years trying to understand the infrastructure of the NHS, and also becoming a bit more concerned because of the number of strategies, programmes, plans, projects that are emerging. I am becoming more confused about who's driving what. There's the Ministry, the NHS England is that same. There's the CCG commissioners. There's the NHS commissioners, there's the CCG. And what worries me is there are all these different proposals. What shocks me is the shortage of numbers of members of the public here tonight.
Yes, this is
And it really concerns me that, yes, you've come here this evening with this proposal, but there are all sorts of others underway. And because I'm on the PPG, because I go to the joint PPG-CCG meeting, I'm becoming aware of these things. And some of them are really very concerning. There's health optimisation, for instance, where the governing body of the CCG in Sheffield has suggested that elective surgery for people who are obese and who smoke should be constrained, and they should either lose weight or stop smoking. Now, how much of that is being shared generally with the public? Right,
can we
I
just
know that particular issue has been abandoned.
Yes, I was just going to say.
It's on the table, and it came out to the PPGs. But there's this commissioning for outcomes about looking at illnesses of low clinical value. Now, I bet most people here don't know what I'm talking about. How come? There's the de-prescribing of certain medication. How many people know about that? There's the stopping of gluten-free foods on prescription. How many people know about that? And it's really worrying me that there's lots of things going off in the ether, and that, you know, people who use the NHS don't know about.
There's a lot in there. I'm just going to let Terry answer one specific bit.
Yeah.
And then.
Can I just say before you ask?
Yeah, but there's a lot of people don't use YouTube.
Yeah.
Don't use YouTube.
They don't have access to
it. Right, I'm going to let Terry answer the question.
Okay, there's a whole raft of different points in there. I think some of them are probably park and someone will get back to you on sort of finer details of that. In terms of governing body making decisions about things, we often don't come up with the proposal. You know, these are things that are either mandated or they come from other kind of teams within the CCG to think. And in terms of health optimization, when that came, you've got two people, and Nikki joins us sometimes for governing body. So three people here on governing, always joins us. So three of us here on the governing body, and we rejected that proposal on the basis that we didn't think it was necessarily fair and equitable. So there are lots of decisions that we have to make. One thing that I would say that I think is brilliant from this is that you are attending your PPG. Because, you know, as you can see, I mean, this has been advertised in the local press. It's been all over social media. It's been on websites. You know, there's been a lot of engagement with community groups to get people to come. And we've not got massive turnout tonight. But in order for people to really kind of get to understand what the NHS is about, and we struggle sometimes because it keeps changing, but you know, the best ways that you can all kind of influence this and so on is to join your PPG and you know, really kind of become involved in what's going on at a wider level.
For colleagues who might not know what a PPG is, practices should have a way of working with their patients, and a patient participation group is the way many have gone forward, and they differ a lot. There's 14 practices in the city that don't have an active one at the moment, but we're working with practices to help them work with their patients. And I think, as Terry said, that is a really good way to get to know what's going on in the NHS. I agree with your comment that there's a huge amount going on in the NHS at the moment. And we are trying to be as open as we can about the things that we're working on. Our monthly board meetings are held in public. They're not public meetings, but members of the public are very welcome to come. But I have to say, they're a bit dry sometimes. I think what's more important is that we get out and meet people in their own networks and groups and organisations and enable people to understand what's going on. There is information that kind of shows simplified pictures of the NHS, but it is an incredibly complex system. I mean, I don't think any of us would have invented, if we were starting from scratch, the complexity that we've got now. You know, and we find it complex working in it, all the things you have to juggle. But and I am sorry we haven't had more people come tonight, but as somebody said at the beginning of the evening, you know, quality over quantity. And this is one of many forums and meetings we're going to be having over the consultation period.
I'm quite shocked there's so few people here. The only reason we are is because I saw Carolyn. Isn't she?
Good woman.
I mean, I don't walk around with my eyes closed. I haven't seen anything in the local library. I must admit, I don't make a habit of buying the local newspaper. I did this week, didn't see anything in it.
Yeah. Well, we will have a think about this as well. Because somebody said at the beginning of the meeting, 6 o'clock's not a great time. And not all our meetings are going to be at 6 o'clock, but we'll have a think about that. And I'm disappointed, but there's nothing we can do about that now, but we'll have a think.
So just because it's helpful having that feedback, where would you look to find that? In the library?
Yes, I'd wander in the library, and I'd just casually glance at the notices as I went in.
And not many people knew about the petition.
No, what petition? Well, we haven't started a petition. You know, we may well receive many petitions, but we haven't started.
It's about moving the units and the walking centre and the minor units.
Yes, and I'm sure we will receive petitions.
Yeah, there's two.
Right. There may be more, we don't know, do we?
Two things. People are not interested in the NHS unless they've got something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. And then they're hot on it. And well, the other thing is, Dawn, you see that? Oh, people are horrified when they read, well, my neighbours and people in S10 are horrified when they think that they have to go all the way to the Northern General for a finger, you know, and you're...
One of the things...
It's horrifying, actually, and years ago we fought very hard to keep minor injuries on this side of town.
And daily.
Yes, and I think what we have to remember as well, I get your point, Rosemary, is Sheffield's quite a big geographical area. So, you know, if you're living in Crystal Peaks, either hospital's a long way to travel. If you're living in Grenaside, it's a long journey to each. So what we have to do also is balance out journeys for all citizens of Sheffield as well and think what works. So I understand your point, but it's bigger than just people in this neck of the woods.
Oh, yes.
And the Hallamshire, and I know you weren't implying that, but you know, we have to consider that. Now, we've got...
As GP is sitting on the bench there, have you got notices on your notice boards and your surgeons?
We have an electronic screen, yeah. So that's on. It's on the screen. I don't know. I can't speak. But yeah, there's certainly information, and it's we've put it on our website as well. And I was speaking to, I think it was it you, Mandy, that mentioned this morning. She was in her practice this morning, and there was a notice there. So certainly it has been perhaps widely advertised. But if you're not seeing it, let us know where you think it ought to be seen, and we'll make sure that it goes there. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think chemists is a really good idea.
Yeah, chemists is a good idea. I mean,
we've sent posters going to chemists and some of the leaflets. We've got postcards which just are announcing it so that people can pick them up more easily. There's an awful lot. I appreciate not everyone's going to see it, but we're trying to cover every avenue. Yeah. So, as they're saying, it's any other suggestions, brilliant.
It's been in the university, yeah.
Yes, farmers
are
doing a great job.
Yes, and Health Watch, which is the watchdog body, they are also promoting it. Now, we've been going for 2 hours. We've got 2 minutes left. So, is there any last burning question anybody's got? Yes.
First of all, can I say thank you very much for you giving up your time this evening.
Thank you.
And as I said earlier, it's about quality, not quantity. And I suppose what I'd like to say is we all want to see healthcare delivered properly, patient-centric, do it once, do it right. You said right at the very beginning, Mandy, about this is not about saving money. It's about realigning resources. But one of the comments that's been made today is concerning me a little bit. Yes, I'd love to see clinicians doing triaging at 111. How much more is that going to cost you?
Yeah. I don't think we can give you those facts and figures now, but note that conundrum, and we'll look into that. Right. Thank you, everybody. I really would urge you, as well as coming to this, and we have noted everything, we've recorded it, we're not going to miss the comments you made, but please do either fill in the questionnaire online or on hard copy, or write to us. We really do want to hear from you. I think I've got a sense of what the issues are from you, but you know, doubly make sure that we know. And in the consultation document you've got, it mentions another couple of public meetings we're having and drop-in sessions we're having. In your networks, can you really appreciate it if you'd mention it to people in your networks, and we'll have a more of a think as well about.
Well, we also have people going out, handing things out in sort of shopping areas and things as well around it. So they won't be discussing it with people because we don't have enough of our own teams to get out there. But they will be handing things out to say this is happening, where you can find out more information. So again, we're trying everything.
It has been, and if you go on to again, sorry if you're not using the internet, but our chair Tim Moorhead gave a very good interview. Was it on Friday or Thursday last week? Friday. But the excerpt is there online, and you can listen to those comments in detail there.
Okay, then. Well, thanks again. Hope you all get home okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.